LNB's audio diary for the 19th of January, 2023. It is a Thursday and it's almost exactly 5 o'clock in the evening. I'm on my way to Wally World to do a little bit of shopping because the weather's supposed to be crap tomorrow and I won't be able to get out. And we're out of some staples. We're out of eggs. We're out of actually bread. I didn't mark that, but I'll put that on the list. We're out of bread just about, butter, things like that. And I don't know, I just sort of blanked on it and didn't pick them up in the weeks past. Sorry about the wind. But like if I want to do any baking or anything, I gotta have those things. So I'm gonna have to do the best I can. I made a cake yesterday. I threw some like a casserole type thing into the oven. And then I was like, well, I don't have any dessert or anything. So I threw a cake together really fast, a dump cake, which as the name implies, you just throw a bunch of stuff together and dump it in the pan and bake it. And it was a little one, just a little thing. It was okay, but the recipe required 2 eggs and I only had 1 left. And that was that. So, you know, I can't do anything along those lines until I have the right ingredients. So that's what prompted this. And we're supposed to get more snow tomorrow and all this other stuff. Speaking of snow, it's been, well, let's put it this way. It's been a lot better than the weather report was implying. But the weather report, like the previous storm front that came through, the weather report was very confused. It seemed to change from hour to hour, and depending on who it was you listened to, you got all different answers. And as it turned out, we didn't get as much, anywhere near as much, as some of these places were implying. Basically, they just didn't know. It was too chaotic to predict, which I guess is still a thing. So, it's late in the day, so the sun is right there in my eyes, going in this direction, and it'll be dark when I come home. So, at any rate, we did get snow, and we did get rain, so we got some ice and stuff too. But overall, it was not bad. Like right now, much of it has melted, much of it hasn't. It was never deep, and the roads are completely clear. So, not that big a deal overall. Oh, I have to get gasoline too. That's another thing. What did I say? I said bread, right? I said bread. So bread and gasoline when I'm driving now, and I can't write those things down. So you're going to have to remember for me, dear listener. So let's see. Yeah, so the weather has been really kind of up in the air, so to speak. And tomorrow probably won't be any different. They're talking about bad weather, bad, you know, rain and snow, and but in percentage chances of it happening. And if we do get it, it'll be, you know, or this massive range from 1 to 7 inches or something. You know, they just don't know. They just don't know. And it's hard to make plans and it's hard to know what to do, but you know, if we're gonna get anything at all tomorrow, it's a good idea to lay in those things that we'll be missing over the weekend otherwise, right? Because tomorrow's Friday, so. And we are home tomorrow. Mrs. Bronx is off today, she's off tomorrow. I've been volunteering there, not every day, but quite a few days. Doing the rabbits and doing the cats. I think I mentioned that last time. Well, I'm still doing it. They're still low on volunteers. And this past week, this week, I guess, earlier this week, they had several volunteers who you know, declined to come in because of the bad weather. I mean, they're not under any obligation. It's entirely, you know, it's entirely up to them if they want to come in. And with bad weather, they don't want to come in. I wouldn't either. You know, if we didn't have to go in, I wouldn't have, you know. So I ended up doing the cats and the rabbits several days. I don't really mind it, but it does punch a big hole in my day. And I'm not used to working. Secondly, I've had foot trouble for decades now, actually. And walking on concrete, not great for your feet, right? So I've had pain and other issues. My knees was acting up and old man complaints, basically. So it's been kind of a haul this past couple of weeks. So kind of a haul. Despite that, things have been going okay. Can't really complain. We've been in good health overall. We've been doing all right since the new year began. And can you believe it? We're, you know, well past the middle of January already. Already. Blink and you miss it. Already. Just amazing how fast it goes. All right, so let's see. What have I been up to? Well, I've actually gotten some stuff done. I have begun the process of working on... begun the process of working on Volume 2 of All He Surveys. That begins with writing or reading what I wrote last time, but I've also been doing some work too. I've been doing some work on it. So it's in the works. It's in the works. That's about the most I can say right now. Just because, you know, it's a process, as you know. So I've done that. I have been working on the next chapter, which is chapter 12 of the audiobook for Volume 1. I did take time off from that over the holiday and, you know, well into the new year, but I have been working on it as well, so that should come out easily before the end of the month. Thursday. Probably over the weekend, maybe. We'll see how much work I get done on it. So that's good. That's good. But then I'm done. I don't have any more recorded. I have to get out there and start recording the second half of the book, right? 12 to 25, so it's more than half. But, not 12, 13 to 25. Yeah, that's it. Okay. I know what I'm talking about. So, yeah, there is a lot yet to do, but it's good to have stuff to do, right? So, let's see. I've actually been working on the role-playing game. I know I said I was going to put it aside, but I get a hair. It gets in my head, and I got to do something about it. So, what have I been doing with it? Well, the next version will be 0.05. And we're into a major point release next time, but we're not close. I'm not close to releasing that just yet. And I'm going to be skipping 0.05 and going to at least 0.01 because I updated to 5. I started working on some stuff there and then I came up with a thought, an idea. And I decided I want to revamp much of the game. Specifically, character generation, character structure, and specifically armor and how armor works in fights and stuff. And though there hasn't been tons of fighting in the game so far, what has happened has shown, at least to me, it's kind of... It's not adequate as far as I'm concerned, right? Now, I've done some, you know, I came up with some rules and I've done some preliminary tests, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But the idea here, first off, we'll do character generation. I'll give you a thumbnail. I'll give you a thumbnail concept on this, what I've been up to here. Basically, we're dumping character attributes entirely, right? And by attributes, I mean strength, intelligence, wisdom, charisma, that stuff. There's six, right? They're going. They won't exist anymore. So the way, and you know, if you're familiar with the way the rules have worked up till now, all of your skills were based on your attributes. So if we get rid of the attributes, the skills have to change as well, right? This will be primarily, almost completely, a skill-based game from this point forward, right? Even things like your saving throws, right? Saving throws were derived from your attributes, right? That's going to change, right? So basically, you start with a base of 10 in all of your attributes, right? And based on your character, what you choose for your character, their background, as well as character points that you get at the very beginning of the game, you can modify that. How's this working again? Hang on. I said your attributes, you start with a base of 10 and everything. That's wrong. Forget what I just said. I'm concentrating on the road. Sorry. I prioritized the road over you, dear listener. But anyway, the attributes are gone. Your skills start with a base of 10, okay? Or rather, I think 11 is where it's going to start when you first learn a skill, right? Okay, there it is. That's how it works. All right, it's all coming back to me now. Okay, so just like before, you get a certain number of skills for free, all right? Then you get character points that you can spend on new skills, or you can spend those character points on attributes, right? You can buy new skills, you can beef up the old skills. That was almost a no-no in the previous version, but now you can do it. You can beef up your skills. You can increase your saves, because your save is an 11 as well, right, to start. So you can put it into saves, your save, and it isn't two saves. We don't have a save mental and a save physical. It's just one saving throw that you throw. It's just sort of a generic, almost like a luck roll in a way. But it will cover things beyond just last-ditch efforts to save your life. It'll cover other things as well. So it's a far more generic sort of saving throw than it was before. There are a couple of things. I have like a list of things that you can put those character attributes into, right? You only have four to start, but you gain them as the adventure goes along, right? Not just at the end of a major adventure you get a certain number. The game master can give them as time goes by. Like if there's a big fight, but the adventure itself isn't over, the game master can give out character points at that stage, right? So you can increase certain things with your character points. Most specifically, your skill levels, right? You can also increase your stamina, and you can increase your hit points, right? I think I have it so that hit points can't change. Nah, I'm gonna change. Yeah, you can stick them in wherever you want, right? Now, a lot of people might focus on stamina because you get stamina back quickly in the game. But of course, hit points are what determine whether you live or die, so that's a choice too. But at any rate, yeah, there are a bunch of things that you can put your character points in to beef them up as time goes by, right? So that's how character characters are going to go. So there are no more character attributes. It's just skills. Except every character also gets something called a defining characteristic, right? Or DC, right? Now, the DC for a character, there's a list of 10 of them, and they are things like smart or strong or fast or dexterous, right? They kind of stand in for having stats in a way, but these are basically, you know, they represent aspects of your character. Things that, like, if people think of you, this is what they think when they first think of you, right? Oh, he's a big guy, or, you know, she was super dexterous. You know, you got to see her in action. It was amazing. It was like a dancer. That's what that means. And that has a direct impact on the types of roles you make later on. Sometimes in certain situations, if you have that defining characteristic or a particular defining characteristic that's called for, you don't even need to roll. It's an automatic success. But if you don't, then you have to roll versus a skill, if you have a particular skill, right? So if you have the defining characteristic of personable, which kind of stands in for a high charisma in a way, you may, you know, using my old standby, you're trying to get past the doorman to get into a club. If you have the defining characteristic of personable, as the game master, you could simply say, if anybody in the group has got the personable defining characteristic, you guys automatically succeed. Otherwise, someone's going to need to roll versus the, I have another skill. It's kind of a catch-all for all of the, remember I used to have, social engineering and lying and performance and a bunch of other things that kind of all crossed over each other in a way when it comes to manipulating us, you know, people, basically manipulating people. I've condensed that down into a single skill, and I forget what it is. I forget exactly the name that I chose, but it's one skill now. If you have that skill, that's what you're going to be rolling against. But if you have the defining characteristic of personable, either, you know, in this particular situation, you don't have to roll at all. But in other situations, maybe you do have to roll. But if you have that skill, you have a situational modifier or sit mod, a real bonus to your roll. So, you know, that's how those things can play out. They can play out as direct wins or losses or modifiers to your skill level, if you have the skill. And if you don't have the skill, like say you need this skill to perform this thing, but if you have this modifier, or this DC rather, it'll give you a modifier on the skill, and if you don't have the skill, it will give you a base skill of X amount, right? Now base skills, or default skills, I should say, not base skills, but default skills are all 8. Right, so you can try virtually anything in the book, any skill roll, 8 or less, and you make it, right? That's not bad, right? It's not great, but it's not bad. It's better than most people, right? And you know, there's some pretty esoteric stuff and technical stuff in the game, as you know, if you know the game, you know that engineering and all this other stuff. But if you make the roll, you make the roll, you know. So 8 is a default number, but as soon as you get trained, you start at 11, and you only go up from there. So that's how those things are going to play out. That's how that stuff's going to work. I'm still going through the rules. I'm cleaning up areas that are calling for attribute roles or something dependent upon attributes. All that's going to get cleaned up for the next version. Let's see. There are a couple of other things I came up with. There's a new attribute for NPCs only called Nerve, right? And the Nerve role is probably, as you know, as you might anticipate, it's a reference to whether or not they're going to keep fighting or resisting you when you want to do, you know, when you want them to either give up or whatever, right? So you're in a fight, depending upon who that NPC is and just how motivated they are to keep fighting, will determine what, you know, how, you know, what the likelihood is that they're gonna stay, right? And you roll on this table, and depending upon who they are, it's gonna be easier or harder to get them to either give up, run away, cower in fear, whatever, right? But it also applies to things like, you know, giving somebody the hard sell, you know, you know, you're selling them a used car or something like that. All that sort of stuff where there's some sort of conflict between your will and theirs, this will determine how that goes, right? And right now, I only have a single die roll for the thing, but I, you know, as I get closer to releasing the rules, I'll have more rules for, you know, if this continues on. Say they make their first roll and they succeed and they keep fighting and resisting. As it goes on and more things happen and more conditions are met, they get less and less, or more and more likely to have their nerve break, right? So that's only for NPCs, because player characters, at least as far as I'm concerned, this is a philosophical decision that I've made as the game designer. As far as I'm concerned, the player characters make the choices about whether or not they want to run away, right? That's not something I take away from the player character. Now, it's different if you get, you know, hit with some kind of attack, or some kind of I don't know, a drug or something, like a fear-inducing drug or something. That would be something that could easily cause, you know, a role that would be an involuntary sort of thing. I don't have any rules set up for that, and that would be a very unusual situation, so I'd probably make something up on the fly. You know, in other words, it's an NPC thing, not a player character thing, because player characters are in control of their characters. So that's my philosophy, and that's how I've designed that particular rule. So that'll be included. Let's see, what else? Armor. Okay, we'll talk about armor. Regarding armor, the way the new rules, and this is still mushy, this is still up in the air, but basically every type of armor has two new conditions, right? Before I get to that, let me just say the new concept is that...
As long as they're in...
There's Klaatu for you. Every type of armor has basically a die roll associated with it, right? So say you get shot, you get hit, right? Whatever armor you are wearing, you roll a die. And whatever that die is, whatever number comes up on that die, first off, I take that back. Let's take a step back, okay? The concept here is that in Star Drifter, you can have multiple types of armor, and they all add up to a superior experience if you're getting attacked, right? They all add protection, right? So you have a shield, maybe you have a hard plate for the chest, and underneath that you have a flak vest, right? That's a very common sort of setup, right? And the way the rules stand now, or in, you know, every version up till this moment, each one of those pieces of armor offer up a piece of protection. They reduce the amount of damage you get by a set number, right? Well, in the new rules, that number is not set. Okay? That number is not set. That number is a die roll, because it will depend on where you get hit, how you were facing when you got hit, whether or not you had your shield, you know, in the right exact spot to protect you, et cetera, right? And it might do less, it might protect you less than before, or it might protect you more than before, right? That's what will happen if you get hit. However, there's also a percentage chance that it will bypass the armor entirely, right? You have your shield, and at the last moment, you moved it just a hair, and the bullet missed it entirely, right? So there's a chance that you could, even though you're wearing all this armor, that it could bypass most of it, right? There's a minimum number. Every piece of armor you wear will have a, will protect you a minimum of 1 point's worth, right? So if you have three pieces of armor, and they're like, if you're using a shield, they got to be attacking you from the front. That's at least 3 points of, you know, that is going, you know, 3 points of damage that it will protect you from, right? But the potential for a much higher level of protection is there, right? Now I've done, I've done some testing on this. There's some pluses and minuses, and it will require some adjustment on the weapons, right? Because at the very basic level, the way the weapons work now, nobody can touch you. If you have a couple of pieces of armor on, you're almost invulnerable, right? That doesn't make for much of a fight. So we're probably going to be adjusting the lethality of weaponry up higher, right? I think that's okay. I think that's okay because the weapons should be extremely lethal, right? And you should be wearing armor. I state that more than once in the rules, right? I make a point of saying that it is dangerous to walk around without armor. It, you know, fights are deadly. Don't get in them. Avoid them entirely, right? So, you have a percentage chance for the armor to actually stop the attack, right? And we'll say it's a bullet, right? You're being shot at. So you have your shield, your hard plate, and, or your chest plate rather, and your flak vest, right? So you roll a percentage chance, and it's a pretty high percentage that a shield will block an attack or interpose an attack, right? So say, the attack is made, and it does maybe 9 points of damage, right? It's a big hit, it does 9 points of damage. Okay, that gets determined first, right? Next, we roll to see if it hit your shield, right? And it's a high percentage, it's like 85% chance that your shield was in the right place at the right time, right? So if it is, you then roll a die to see how much damage the shield absorbed, all right? And it could absorb, well, probably won't absorb all of it if it's 9, but it'll absorb, it, there's a chance that it could absorb a good portion of the damage that you know, that's been meted out, right? But let's say, just for the sake of argument, it stops 4 points, right? Stops 4 points. That's 4 points that get through the shield, right? You then look at the chest plate that you have on, right? You do the same thing. You roll a percent to see if the chest plate was in the right place at the right time to offer some protection, right? You roll that, and then you roll a percent, you know, if assuming it is, you roll versus the protection die that will determine how many points it stops, right? So say it rolls 2 points, right? That leaves 1 point left. No, there's, I said there was four. So there's four, I said it was 9. It stopped 4 points. There's 5 points. Say it stopped 2, right? Bad roll or whatever, right? Stop 2 points. And again, there's a minimum of 2. Whether or not you make that number, like that percentage chance for it to stop, you know, to actually interpose itself with the die roll, or with, I'm sorry, with the bullet, it still does a minimum of 1 point, right? A minimum of 1 point, because otherwise, why wear armor at all, right? So a minimum of 1 point. But it did 2. The chest plate did 2. So now it's the flak vest, and now we roll versus the flak vest. And maybe the flak vest, you roll another 2 with the flak vest, right? So that leaves 4 for the shield, 2 for the chest plate, 2 for the flak vest, and we determine the same way with the percentage and then the die roll. And finally, that leaves 1 point left over, and that's what your character takes. Yes, it's slow. Yes, it's complicated. But it's nowhere near as complicated as some of the other role-playing games that are out there. And you get multiple chances. I think that it I don't know, from my point of view, it would be a lot of fun because it would be a lot of fun to keep rolling to see if my armor protects me all the way or not. So in this case, 9 points becomes 1 point, right? But it can go the other way too. You can roll really bad each time and only get those 3 points, right? But the odds are against that. The odds are generally in your favor when it comes to getting. It's, I'm still playing with it, and I probably didn't describe it very well, but basically there is far more interactive as to whether or not the armor will stop things. And other stuff comes into play too, like if they attack you from behind, obviously the shield doesn't play a part in this. But there are, overall, I think there's real potential there for a pretty good approximation of what these armors are supposed to be doing for you. One of the things that I found in my pre-testing here is, yes, it's a lot of die rolls. It is. It's a lot of die rolls. But if you're organized, it goes pretty quickly and pretty smoothly. Secondly, it can stop a tremendous amount of damage. A massive amount of damage. So it, as I say, accordingly, the weapons are going to be more dangerous than they used to be. That also means that if they're more dangerous than they used to be and you roll badly, you could really be in a world of hurt. But we've, rules regarding hit points and stamina and all that, none of that has changed. So you have multiple chances of being saved, if someone's around with the medico skill. So I don't feel too badly about that. The next part is just that you do need to not just be organized regarding the characters, right? And the armor they're wearing and in what order and stuff. But you need to have it's clear when you're talking about it, what are you rolling against first, right? Someone shoots at you, what are you rolling against first, then second, then third, then fourth, whatever, however many pieces of armor you have, right? But I'll have all of that written out so that if it's from the front, right, and you have a shield, the shield is always going to be first. Then something on the outside will be next, so that in my example that I gave you, the hard plate, or the chest plate rather, will be next, right? The chest plate is always going to be next. And then if you have armor underneath that, some kind of soft armor underneath that, like a flak vest, that will be last, right? And there are other kinds of armor, obviously, and they can all have, you treat them in certain ways, right? In addition, damage category still exists, right? I used that for DC before. We'll have to change that. Defining characteristic and damage category. I'll have to change the acronyms for those. But at any rate, damage categories still exist for weapons and armor. So if someone comes at you with, say, a shield and they've got like a club, you're immune to their attacks so long as you have that shield in front of you, because the shield is blocking the club, right? Other types of weapons can be more dangerous, and those kinds might get past the shield, or they might be dangerous enough to get past the shield, such as a pistol or something like that. So, that still exists. So if you have if the damage category, if the weapon does not exceed the damage category, then, or I should say the damage category of the weapon does not exceed the defensive capabilities of that piece of armor, then you are immune to the attack, while you wear that armor. So I will have all of this detailed out in a list. So whenever there's a fight, you just go down the list, down the list, down the list, and all of it will make sense, right? All of it will make sense. On top of it all, capping all of this, it's still just an optional rule. It's still going to be just an optional rule. I think it should be encouraged as being part of the active fight. But if you want a simpler version, the base version will still be there. And, you know, I might tweak it and modify it, but it will still be there. So it's just a basic set number that you always, you know, focus on. But I think that this is a little more exciting. It's a little more dynamic, actually a lot more dynamic. And, you know, it can add some real, you know, drama to a fight. Yes, it slows it down, but I've seen some of the, you know, more modern games and how complicated the fights can be, and this is nothing as bad as some of those. So anyway, that covers armor pretty much. And I know I didn't explain it clearly, but it'll all make sense when I finally have it all written down in a cohesive fashion. I have the basic rules already written down, but they're for me. They're notes for me. So when I have it all written down in a cohesive fashion, it will, I really do think this will be a good approach to combat, right? It makes it very dangerous. It makes it very deadly. It makes it pretty obvious you want armor. So that was really a very important part of it. Now there's another, well, there are other things that I've been doing regarding the gaming stuff that I'll talk about in a little bit. But anyway, let me go into Walmart and spend our money. Okay, that was Walmart. Let me roll out of here. It's dark now, and a character parked across the way has their lights on and bright in my eyes. So I am not gonna linger. And I do need to get gasoline, so I do need to make one more stop. But other than that, I am heading straight home. Are you really gonna turn here? That's tight. I hate that. Okay.
Or not. I could enjoy.
Oh, there's Klaatu again.
So anyway, you're not gonna.
Sorry.
Nobody's gonna look.
My stupid stereo system here, you have to turn it off completely. Like, if you pause it, it'll unpause after a while for no rational reason. There's a kitty crossing the road. Well, you won't have a long life around here with all these cars. Sorry, kitty. Let's see. Sorry. Okay, so what else? Well, I recently started working. I think last time I mentioned Owlbear Rodeo is on version 2.0. It's in beta, but it's totally usable. I haven't run into any bugs just yet. So what I've been doing is I've been setting up a game environment, including tokens for player characters and NPCs and stuff, and I have got a buttload of them. I have tons of them now. All of them designed for, just pick and choose if you want, or you could walk in. I have an easy way to make tokens if someone has an image of a character that they like. I have an easy way to do that. Let's see, can I get gasoline here? I guess so. It's all icy. I don't like that. Yeah, I have a lot of tokens now for player characters. I have a setup. I have everything really required to run a game if and when I'm ready. So I'm getting ready to really ramp up on this. What I'm going to do with it, I haven't decided just yet. Hold on. Okay, that was gasoline. Well, this was one expensive trip out. We needed a lot of stuff, and I actually scratched off a couple of things from my list that I thought were going to be expensive, and they weren't pressing. So I'm glad I did, because we're pretty tapped out. We'll get some money in tomorrow. Tomorrow's payday for Mrs. Bronx, but even so. All right, so let's see. Yeah, I have things set up for the game, for a game, not the game, because I don't have a campaign set up, and I don't really have a concept for one just yet, but I am working on it. I am working on it, and I think the way I'll do this, because all of these virtual tabletops are different, and they all have a learning curve, including this one, though this one's learning curve is considerably less than, say, Roll20 or any of the others. Very much so. And a lot of it is just very common sense. Some of it is a little counterintuitive. So there is, as I say, there's a learning curve. So I think what I would do, or what I would want to do with a prospective group, is to have basically have a session zero, but not for the sake, like a session zero for RPGs. They can be used for a lot of different things, but a lot of times they're used for characters just to get to know each other. And, get to know a little bit about the world and to flesh things out and to ask questions of the game master and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Well, this would do that, but most specifically it would be for getting used to the virtual tabletop. And I think more than one session is kind of warranted. So I think the first one would be like a traditional session zero and playing around with the with Owlbear Rodeo. And then after that, we have at least one more where we have like some mock situations. Maybe they could even be preliminaries to the campaign, but they would, you know, they wouldn't count for anything, right? And, you know, I'd pretty much, you know, guarantee you're not going to die or anything like that in those. They're just, you know, like whatever happens, it will happen for the sake of the campaign, but it won't have any lasting effect on your character per se. Negative effect anyway. And that will allow you to use the mechanics and to use the system and to get used to how things go and how the mechanics of Star Drifter go. And a little bit of like one of those, an evening like that might be really good before the actual campaign kicks in. And I think there's some value in something like that. And it would get, you know, everybody kind of used to what's going on, you know? Now, there's no guarantee that the group I had last time would be available again. So I have to assume that if I branch out and I kind of reach out to people or, you know, put my hat in the ring someplace, I don't know where, that there would be, you know, strangers in the group, people who don't know me and I don't know them. That's a possibility. That could happen. So I think having kind of a slow start regarding the game mechanics and the tabletop, the virtual tabletop, but a lot of intriguing elements thrown in. The part of the problem with an entirely homebrewed system and setting like this one is that there's a slow start, right? There's always going to be an info dump at the beginning, and there's going to be a slow start. So, and I found that out before, you know, with the other campaign. I just found that it was a very slow start, and that people, they must have got, if they didn't get bored, they at least, you know, they glazed over all the details because it was just a massive amount of information at the very, very beginning. So what I think I would do is subsume all of that stuff into a handout, and people can look at it or not at their leisure. And the start of the game would be a very fast thing, right? It's the future, they're spaceships, they're faster than light drive, but it's different than Star Trek and all these other things. And we'll get to it when we get to it. Don't worry about that part. We don't have phasers. People are still using pistols, but there are some other things that are pretty advanced. You know, and just an overview of the technology. Artificial intelligence is around, cybernetics is around, and most of the population is living in giant space stations that are the size of cities or even bigger. And that's probably good enough to start for, you know, most people. And then you get into the details as you need to, you know. You don't need a massive info dump necessarily. You know, just a quick overview that, you know, there are four supernations, but you're living in the Alliance, and the Alliance is, you know, just a conglomeration of different types of governments and, you know, different star systems. You know, just a very quick, I think I could probably cover it all in like 2 minutes to get started, all the basic information people would need. And after that, you just fill in the blanks as you go. You just fill them in as you go. And if there was a session zero or time to talk to players before the game even starts, you can flesh out their characters really, really well. If you don't have that freedom, it doesn't matter really what game you're playing, because, you know, the characters aren't going to have an awful lot of depth to them. So, And of course, again, it's a homebrew system, so people won't have any idea what to expect of Star Drifter, you know. Especially if you say there's no aliens, it's just humans. And, you know, it can be confusing, in other words. And I think it's inevitable that it's going to have a slow and kind of confused start. So the fewer barriers to entry in this game, the better, right? So rolling up the characters has become much easier with these new rules, much faster, you know? And I think that's a barrier to entry a lot of times. If you have to sit down and take a long time to create a character, on the one hand, that gives you a really good chance to get used, you know, get a sense of the character in your head, build the character, create a character with a particular flair to them, a particular element to them. So there's definitely an advantage there, you know. On the other hand, if it takes a long time to create a character, you know, and it's complicated, games like, you know, there are a bunch of them out there that do that are like. In fact, I think most of the big ones these days are character creation is really complicated. And I've been trying to pare back on some of the complication of Star Drifter. And frankly, to get away from some of the conventions of, you know, other games, you know, legacy elements that, you know, I may or may not have applied anymore. So I think that a fast start to the game, get the character, you know, get the players in there really, really quickly, and then you're off and running. You know, you're just off and running. I think there's an advantage there, you know, as well. It just depends on, it just kind of depends on how committed the players can be to the campaign. And I think it's probable that the elements that everybody understands already about, say, fantasy role-playing games, just the fantasy setting in general, you know, for D&D or Pathfinder or something, those elements, people walk in with much of that as common knowledge already. You know, It's a semi-medieval setting. People are using swords and knives and spells and things of that nature. And, you know, if they saw Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, they're 85% of the way there already, right? Star Drifter is different because it's its own thing, but it has elements in common with other stuff, right? So if people are like, you know, well, what's it like? And it's like, well, imagine a technology level somewhat akin to Battlestar Galactica, the remake. It's kind of like that, right? Firearms are common still, but we have spaceships, we have faster than light drive. We have artificial intelligence. We have artificial gravity. We have a lot of this stuff. So if you think about Battlestar Galactica, if you're familiar with it, you're 85% of the way there. And so there are, you know, there are things that are touchstones that can people can use to become familiar in advance with Star Drifter. So, I think a campaign could really work with, you know, like a virtual tabletop, especially something simple like Owlbear Rodeo, which I've become familiar with. You know, I wouldn't say I'm an expert by any means, but I'm familiar with it now. And that's more than I can say with, you know, about Roll20, and I've spent at least as much time over there messing around as I have with Owlbear Rodeo. And yes, there are many more things available for Roll20, no argument. It's there's just more there. But most of it is stuff I wouldn't use. And I find the interface and much of how it's laid out to be very hard to grasp. You know, familiarity would make it, you know, being using it more and more and more, and especially if I played in a campaign for a while, someone else's campaign, I would get a lot more used to it. But that's not the case, and that's really not what we have going on here. So, differences with a campaign from the last one. I think I would eschew the open world concept that I was experimenting with on that one. Not completely. That is to say, you would be free to do whatever you wanted, but there would definitely be an adventure going, you know, it would be clear that there's an adventure for you to participate in if you want to, right? And it wouldn't be like, this thing happened to you, and now, here you go. It wouldn't be like that. It would be a lot more like, you can do whatever you want. You can go anywhere you want to go. You can do any of that stuff. But this is what's going on. And if you want to have an adventure, this is where it's going to be. Or this is what it's going to be, right? And I might have more than one adventure ready to go so that they can choose what they want to do. But it would be a choice, a narrowly defined choice, right? It would be... hang on. There's just something weird about the way that the high beams work on this car. Sometimes they'll, like, stick. It's weird. It'll be in low beam, and I go to turn on high beam, and it won't come on. But then, like... 5-10 seconds later, it'll come on, right? Sounds like a loose switch or something, but then it can be the other way too. And then other times it's fine. Like this, it's not going on. I'm just not getting my high beams. They're my high beams. Maybe I just had to turn it. And is that, yeah, kind of... I think I just had the daylights on. Oh, well, no wonder I couldn't see anything. Anyway, yeah. I'm challenged. I shouldn't be on the road. Anyway, Sorry. There we go. There's my high beams. So anyway, I think that there's a lot of potential here. And, you know, with just a little bit of time commitment on the part of players and the ability to focus and maybe really get into their characters. It could be a lot of fun. It could be a lot of fun. A campaign for me would probably start in a similar place, in a similar position as the previous one, because I did a ton of work on Opal City Station. I like it too. I think it's good to have a base of operations, you know. Your town or your city that your characters start in, you know, D&D, where, you know, you always go to the inn and that sort of stuff. You can dispense with that in time, but to begin with, it's good to have a place that the characters can call home. And I would like to have that for this campaign, where Opal City Station is home. They can go anywhere they want after that, and they don't have to ever come back to Opal City if they don't want to. But having a place to start is a good thing, right? Especially, you know, they don't know anything about the campaign or the game system or anything like that. It's good to have, like, well, you're basically in a city. And anything you could expect in a modern city, you're going to find here, plus a whole lot more. And if you go from that standpoint, just, you know, from that standpoint, you're doing pretty well. You're doing pretty well. And I think it'd be a really good thing for players to hold on to and move forward with, you know? I don't know. It's just my opinion, obviously, but that's the approach I think I'm gonna take. That players will have time to get used to the game, to get used to the campaign, to get used to each other, but not too much. Right? Not too much. They can have time to mess around a little bit, but the fact is the adventure will be beginning in due course, and, you know, and relatively quickly. They'll see the signs of it relatively quickly, and it'll be very clear. Probably they'll be hired to do a thing or two. I have a concept in mind. But if they don't want to do that, they can do other things, you know? And I might have two or three things set up, ready to go, if they want to do them. Or they can come up with something entirely on their own, if they choose to. Just understanding the limitations of this universe. I have a lot of built-in limitations in Star Drifter, you know, just based on the stories and things like that. You know, it's very, very common in space games for characters to get a ship right away. And Star Drifter takes, you know, the opposite approach. You don't get a ship, you know, and you probably will never be able to afford one. Something weird might happen and you get a chance, you know, you either get access to one or you may be able to take one at some point. But, you know, it'll be up to the players to make those choices, you know. If, like, say they say, well, I want to get a ship, and say, well, it's very, very expensive, and it's an involved process to do it the normal way. But it's possible to take them as prizes sometimes in different parts of the world, or different parts of the galaxy, rather. If they can take one from a pirate, and it's already been superannuated, meaning it was already taken out of rotation because it was considered a junk because it's no longer available, right? There are different, you know, legally speaking, there are different ways for these things to be structured. If they can take it from a pirate, then they can jump through all the hoops required to get the thing legally set up and all on their own, you know, get new codes for the system, you know, security codes for the system, you know, get all that taken care of, lots and lots of stuff, tons and tons of things they can do. So, and, you know, one of my favorite approaches would be to go the cheap route. There's tons of ways to do that too, so it's not impossible to get a ship, but it's not automatic. And unless I decide that it is, I could just say, yeah, you have a ship. The problem, of course, as I've established in the books and the stories, is that ships are incredibly expensive. They're incredibly expensive to buy and expensive to maintain, right? They cost money. The moment you get a ship, it costs money. You've got to pay for the build bond. You've got to pay for docking fees. You've got to pay for maintenance. You've got to pay for fuel. You know, it's just, it's almost unending, right? And that means you have to hustle, hustle, hustle. You have to hustle to make money to pay for this ship. It's more trouble than it's worth in a lot of cases, right? It's a lot of bookmaking work or a lot of book work. Just more, you know, it's just a pain in the ass. And that's why I would discourage people from getting one, because it's just a pain in the ass. It's a lot better to you know, just purchase rides on them, you know, because you can almost always find a ship going where you want to go. You just have to look around. And sometimes you have to make a lot of connections and spend a lot of time in cold passage, you know, just being cold, you know, frozen down. But you can almost always find a ship that'll take you where you want to go. And if you can't, you can hire one, because there are ships that are for hire. So, you know, owning a ship is probably not a great direction to go in this game. And that's something that I guess they would find out as time goes on. It's like, this isn't like other games, you know? It's kind of space opera in its trappings, but it's more like a drama or a political thriller in, you know, when you get on the ground with it, you know, when you're actually involved in the storylines. So anyway, I think there's potential there. I think there's potential there for a really good campaign, and I would like to pursue one. I don't have a timetable for it. You know, I have other things going on, and sometimes those things are going to definitely take priority, but I really want this thing to fly, and it's going to be a weekly game, and I will, you know, expect people to show up. And if they can't show up, then they can't play, obviously. So, it would be better if I, you know, was actively involved in gaming communities online, which I'm not. But I don't really know where to go with that, you know? I don't really know how to approach that. Yeah, I don't know how to approach that, but, you know, one step at a time, one step at a time. Anywho, let's see, where is the entrance to, there it is. All right, sorry, in the dark, I've blown past our turn off more than once. There we go. This is it. I got people behind me saying, dude, when are you gonna turn? Well, now I'm turning. Okay, so, yeah, a lot of changes afoot for the role-playing game. I absolutely love to kick the tires on this thing, you know, the new rules. I might do that. I might set up something and just put the word out and see who shows. You know, it's like, on this time I'm gonna be at this place, and, you know, hit me up if you want to play, you know, or just show up. That'll be great. And I think that'd be fun. Klaatu was doing games on the HPR server. I wonder if those are still going on, because I might try something like that, you know, just like, I'm running a game, if you want to participate, here it is. It's going to be the Star Drifter game system and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. There are a lot of directions to go in. A lot of things I can do. It would be fun. It would be fun to have a group that not only was enjoying the game, but who enjoyed each other's company. And what that usually entails is friends, people who, you know each other pretty well. And that's a harder thing to do. You know, there is a local gaming shop. I think I've talked about them before. They mostly focus on Magic the Gathering and other card games. But I've heard that there's a regular D&D game there. Maybe I can just show up and start, you know, if they're looking for players, maybe I could show up and start playing D&D there. I have the books, you know, they're playing 5e. I have the books. I don't really know the system anymore, but they'd walk me through, and I think I'd pick it up pretty quickly. I should try that. That's in person, right? Since COVID, I've been really gun-shy with hanging out with strangers, but, you know, like at Walmart, I still wear the mask and everything. But, I don't know. It might be worth it. If I do that, then it might be a group, and I could say, hey, I'm doing this thing. And then that could be an in-person group. Or, you know, those players could play online, you know, if they wanted to. I don't know. There's always possibilities. Possibilities. All right. I guess that'll be it for today, because I am home.